Moss, then just tell me afterwards.
I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes for Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. First order of business is approval of the minutes from the February 19th, 2013 hearing. Are there any corrections? Seeing no corrections, Senator Clinton moves approval of the minutes from Tuesday, February 19th, 2013. All in favor of that motion, please say aye. Please say aye.
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 We're going to do this again. Please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails. This morning, we have a report on our agenda, then legislation. And then we have a bill that deals with issues, policy in the same area. And then we have Senator Eaton and Senator Dietzick presenting the Department of Revenue's policy and technical bill. So we would like to welcome the Department of Natural Resources. If you would come to the table, please. We're going to have a report, a presentation of a report on payment in lieu of taxes. So, hi. Welcome
morning,
to the
Madam
committee.
Chair members.
If you folks would identify yourself, please, for the record, we'll get going.
Bob Meyer, Director of Policy and Government Relations with the Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Susan Damon from our Lands and Minerals Division. Susan was responsible as the project manager for a work project that we were assigned through the 2011 budget bill requiring the department, in conjunction with stakeholders, local units of government primarily, to examine the PILT process and the PILT payments, payment in lieu of taxes for acquired lands and other state-owned lands that are there. We'll be going through the actual statutory requirement here momentarily, but there were a number of things we needed to examine. We will walk through that in an expeditious fashion, if possible, and stand for questions. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to Susan Damon.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Damon. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Susan Damon, D-A-M-O-N. I'm the transaction manager at the Department.
Ms. Damon, would you move the microphone closer to you, please?
Susan Damon, Department of Natural Resources, Transactions Manager in the Division of Lands and Minerals.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department in the 2011 first special session, a bill was passed that required the Department of Natural Resources to prepare a report to the legislature about payment in lieu of taxes. The specific legislative charge required the Commissioner of Natural Resources to cooperate with the Commissioners of Revenue and Management and Budget and stakeholders, including members of affected local units of government and other interested parties, to report to the legislature with recommended changes to the payment in lieu of taxes for natural resources system. There were five specific criteria that were required. The report first was required to include an analysis of the current payment and distribution system, and you'll find that in Chapter 1 of the PILT report that was in your materials. And then five criteria were required to be considered, and the department and others contributing to the report were required to propose any recommended changes to the purpose of the payment system and the criteria for payments, the rate of payments for specific classes of natural resources lands, the adequacy of current funding for payments, and the impact of additional land acquisition on the funding. alternative methods of reimbursing local units of government for state natural resources lands, and the formula for distribution of the payments to local units of government.
Ms. Damon, did the legislative directive also include preparing draft legislation to enact your recommendations?
Madam Chair, the directive did not require preparation of legislation.
Is the department going to be having legislation that reflects the recommendations, or is this just a report?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Meyer.
Members, in consultation with the other agencies that were involved with this, it was decided with other higher priorities dealing with tax issues this session that we would not move forward with language to implement any of the recommendations at this time, but wait until next session and try to flesh out some of the recommendations a little bit further.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful information. Ms. Damon.
Madam Chair, the report process that was used was for the Commissioner of Natural Resources in collaboration with the other two agencies to put together a commissioner's advisory group comprised of stakeholders and persons with expertise in the area of PILT. There were several representatives from counties. We worked with the Association of Minnesota Counties to nominate representatives from county boards. There were three agency representatives, one from MMB, one from DNR, and one from Department of Revenue. We worked with the Association of the Minnesota Association of Townships recommend members who had township positions to participate in the advisory group, and there were three members. There was also a representative from the Minnesota School Boards Association, and then some subject matter experts, which included Keith Carlson and Brian Connors, who is the Itasca County Assessor, and former Commissioner and former Senator Jean Merriam, and also former Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources Ron Nargang. There were a series of meetings that were held. They were facilitated meetings where we reviewed background materials and discussed various proposals and ideas and discussed the criteria that were required in the legislative charge. Some of the discussion revolved around the PILT increases since 1979. As you can see from this chart, the total cost of PILT has gone from slightly over $5 million to approximately $26 million in the last year. One of the interesting findings was that the major driver of cost increases are the increases in values of acquired lands rather than land acquisition being the greatest driver of cost increases. It's actually the valuation of land and the revaluations that occur every 5 years as required by the PILT laws. So I'd like to go over the recommendations. There were six sets of recommendations from the Commissioner's Advisory Group. There was one recommendation that is only from the DNR, as there was no advisory group consensus about this recommendation. The first recommendation of the group was to amend Minnesota Statutes Chapter 477A to include a purpose statement for PILT. The purpose, as originally intended, based on our research of the legislative history and some newspaper articles that were that quoted members of the legislature who sponsored the initial PILT legislation, was that the primary purpose was property tax levy reduction and also funding for counties to help develop their tax forfeited natural resources lands. And currently there is a partial purpose statement in the PILT law that was added in 2000, but it doesn't explain the original intent of the drafters of the legislation. The second recommendation was a three-part recommendation. The current pelt laws, as you, I'm sure, are aware, are very complex. They're found in Chapter 477A, and there's also laws in the Game and Fish Law, 97A.061, that pertain to pelt. And the recommendation of the group was to simplify the rate structure. One recommendation was to put all of the pelt laws into one statute, move the provisions that are in 97A.061 into Chapter 477A. There are also some provisions in the pelt law that are currently obsolete. For example, goose management croplands have a special payment rate. This historically dates back to the 1960s, before there was a value-based payment. And it was the consensus of the group that that was no longer necessary and that those lands could be paid at the 0.75% of appraised value rate. There are also some provisions in Chapter 97A.061, Subdivision 1, pertaining to hunting lands that are expensive to administer and provide very little additional payment to the counties. There was also a recommendation that the process for valuation be clarified and standardized. The Department of Revenue conducted a survey during the course of the advisory group process where they tried to determine how county assessors valued the lands. And there was not a uniform method by which the lands were valued. So the recommendation there was to ensure that a standardized method is used. There was also a recommendation that the five-year reassessment that is currently in Chapter 477A be moved to a 3 or 6 year cycle to coincide with assessment of exempt lands that are done by the Department of Revenue. This would streamline the process for the counties. There was also a recommendation that Department of Revenue be granted authority to monitor land values on payment in lieu of taxes to ensure that those values are appropriately applied. The third recommendation provided some criteria that the legislature should consider if there's a change in the future.
Yes. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before you go to the next slide, and I think that's what I was sensing you were going to do, on the bottom bullet there, the character of the land, but noting that the public land value may differ from the private market value. Now, I noticed that the assessors were represented on this group. I was curious how the assessor would address that when we generally use highest and best use as a method for valuation.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I think I would have to defer to an assessor to answer that question.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe later on in the meeting somebody could talk about that. But, I mean, if we're going to have different values on land based, whether it's public or private, it appears to me that that's going to be a pretty complicating factor for the assessors to deal with.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. That's an important point to raise. Mr. Meyer, did you have any further comment, or shall we continue?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy brings up a good point. This is a complicated issue that we see happening. Related to this point, where there's assessed values being carried by the counties, and then the land is acquired, and the appraisals come in much higher than that. So it becomes rather complicated. By law, those appraisals are supposed to be within 90% of the market value. And there's been some recent examples where it's been grossly under. So this is it's an issue that we need to look at, and also the point not to overlook it is giving the Department of Revenue or the state the authority to appeal or monitor these property values. There was an instance last session or last fiscal year where in reviewing the data, there was a gross overpayment made that we had to go back and have the county correct that payment on the land. So
just so I understand that, Mr. Meyer, when there is that difference, the PILT payment is based on which one of those values?
PILT payment is based upon the purchase price or what we pay, and that value remains for 5 years until those lands are reassessed. So it's 0.75% of the appraised value, but when we first purchase that land, the actual purchase price becomes the value that's there for the first 5 years.
So the payments can eventually be made on a value that's far less than the market value? Is that what the problem is?
Madam Chair, it's
or the other way around.
Value. The assessed value, because many of these lands, these public lands, are not assessed
right
as you would private property. Mm-hmm. So they're because of the work of the auditors and the work loads that are there, some use different methods to evaluate the value of public lands or open spaces. And that's where he comes into a little bit of question.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Myers, maybe from my reading of the issue is that as these sales have occurred and the values come in significantly higher than the current assessed value is, the indication is that the assessors aren't keeping up with the land value increases that is occurring in the area. Would that be a fair assessment of what's going on? And the reason that that has implications for us is because the PILT payments increase as the value of the lands increase?
That's what I'm asking.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, I don't want to say that the assessors aren't doing their job. It's the practices and the processes they use to assess those values where there's little return in investment on those efforts. So, but that is part of the problem, the assessed values and then market values and what the payments are.
Ms. Von Mosch, do you have a comment to make from the department? Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And address this issue.
Susan Von Mosch from the Department of Revenue.
And you need to move the mic closer, too.
And the best person to address this issue is John Hagan with our property tax division, and unfortunately he is not available today to attend the meeting. And in the survey that was conducted with the county assessors in terms of the assessment practices, we did find that there were some inconsistent methods used around the state, and that is one of the reasons for the recommendations that we are going to be working with the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers to talk about getting more uniform standards involved. And some of it is just educating, the process of educating assessors in terms of how to value the land. And so we hope to be addressing some of these concerns through our role as educators and providing training for the assessors and working with the assessment organization.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Von Mosch, if you would forward my question about the different value of the land, whether it's public or private, and what the department would be considering under that, I would be curious to hear what he has to say in that regard.
Mr. Scoy, Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, I will do that, and I will actually have Mr. Hagan approach you and talk with you about that.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. Any other questions on this slide? Ms. Damon, you may continue.
The third recommendation of the advisory group dealt with payment adequacy, and that recommendation was that the legislature consider restoring the annual inflationary adjustments to flat rate PILT payments. Inflationary adjustment to PILT payments was repealed in the special session in 2011, and the impact of that repeal affects the counties that have a lot of public land, for example, school trust land, that is paid at a flat rate. Changes in the 2011 special session did not affect the payments to those lands that are acquired lands that are paid on the value-based method, 0.75%, because those still will continue to be reassessed every 5 years. But the concern was that this change would greatly impact the counties that really depend a lot on payment in lieu of taxes and have the most public lands. The fourth recommendation deals mainly with the impact of additional land. As I mentioned earlier, we determined through the process that the primary driver of cost increases is the increases in values of lands that are paid at the 0.75%. There is an increase associated with additional land acquisitions, but this increase is not as high as the increase is caused by the changes in values. And there is a perception that increased land greatly increases the PILT obligation of the state, and the advisory group recommended that there be efforts to inform the public about PILT and about the actual drivers of the cost increases.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, to that point about the increased value driving the PILT payment, but if that land hadn't been acquired by the state, it would be in private hands and would be subject to the property tax that would be increasing by the value. So they weren't recommending that we should go away from the valuation, that 0.75% of value, but just try to explain it to people better, or what are they thinking of there?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, there was no recommendation to change the 0.75% of appraised value, but there is a public perception that the major driver of cost increases in PILT is land acquisition, and the advisory group determined that it was actually the value increases every 5 years that are the major driver of the cost increases.
Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, just to this point, a lot of the discussion focused around what the counties understand and what they see when they receive notice that the payment has been made. It's electronic transfer into their accounts. They don't know parcel per parcel how much they're receiving for those lands. So what we're going to be doing here is creating more of a template for each county to be able to say Schmidt WMA or whatever WMA or state park it is, you're getting basically this much money in the payment in lieu of taxes for that parcel. So it's a confusion level that some county commissioners don't even know how much PILT they're getting at the county and for what pieces of land they have. So a lot of this focus, that recommendation, talking about enhancing existing efforts to inform the public, focus around different things that the state can do to help people understand what they're getting for their money.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And Mr. Myers, or to the other witness, but this percentage of appraised value only applies to acquired and DOT wetland acres. So primarily it is the acquired acres that's driving the PILT payment, because that's where the valuation mechanism falls. Now, did they talk at all about expanding that valuation mechanism to the other categories that receive payment in lieu?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, that is correct, that the 0.75% of appraised value, the acquired lands payment, does constitute the majority of the PILT payment. I believe it's around 73% of the total payment. There was, during the course of the meetings with the advisory group, there was some discussion about value-based payments for the other land types. It would increase the cost of PILT astronomically. There wasn't a consensus recommendation, but there was some discussion around that.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Damon, but wouldn't that all be scalable? I mean, you wouldn't have to use 0.75% of appraised value. You could use some other number. So you wouldn't increase the cost, but you would have an under a mechanism that would be reflecting changes in value.
Ms. Damon?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, there could be a change in the rate, and that would be a possibility. We didn't specifically look at that with the advisory committee, but that is definitely something that could be considered.
Thank you.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, we're buying a lot of new land under the legacy dollars, and is there any way for money that would be towards a trust fund to pay for PILT payments to come from that? I realize right now it appears that there isn't, you know, so that we're buying the land, but then we don't have any money from those dollars to pay the PILT payment. Have you guys thought through that issue? Do we have any way to solve that? What are your thoughts?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Meyer.
Senator Gazelka, that was a point of discussion, and that's kind of what this recommendation focused on. We talked about that a lot. There's been discussions about how do you do that, and are those funds eligible? I think it's. I know there's a letter from the Attorney General's office that questions the constitutionality of doing that. Obviously, there's different ways to do different things, but there's concern amongst a lot of people of the constitutionality of those legacy funds to be used for payment. Payment in lieu of something. Does that fit the constitutional language around those funds? But it's something that I know people are interested in continuing to discuss.
Senator Gazelka.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, so it isn't clear then. It is at least a possibility that we're still exploring. Because I think, you know, buying the land, I think a lot of people have appreciated, you know, the fact that we can do that. But I think a number of those same people would say it doesn't make sense that we aren't paying the PILT payment through the same program. So if we can explore that and come to a conclusion, it would be great.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Ms. Damon, if you'd continue.
Madam Chair, this slide has essentially already been discussed. The recommendation number 5 was that the legislature should further develop alternatives to pay for future PILT obligations instead of relying solely on general fund payments. Let's see. The recommendations 6 and 7 dealt with distribution. Recommendation 6, there is a distribution to school districts for the hunting land payments, but not for the payments that are made under Chapter 477A. There's also a distribution to school districts for Vermilion and Sudan underground mine state parks. The advisory group did not spend a lot of time addressing the school district payment, but did recommend that that issue be monitored further for possible implications with changes to the school funding formula. And the final recommendation was a DNR recommendation. This was a recommendation where there was not group consensus. And that recommendation was that the legislature revise the distribution formula to provide townships with at least a 10% of the actual payment to the county for acquired lands. When PILT, the main PILT law was originally enacted in 1979, all payments were on a flat rate. And at that time, the distribution to the townships was 10% of that flat rate. The value-based payment was the result of 1995 legislative changes to the PILT laws. And at that time, the payment increased, but there was no change to the distribution formula. And the distribution remained 10% of the flat rate. So what happened in essence was the payments to the townships have not kept up with the payments to the counties. And the DNR, this was also a recommendation in the legislative auditor's 2010, not necessarily a recommendation, but it was pointed out in the legislative auditor's report that this payment in 2010, that this payment had not kept pace, the payment to the township. And so the DNR recommends that the townships receive 10% of the actual payment for acquired lands rather than 10% of the flat rate.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Damon. So this, again, would only apply to the acquired, and the DOT wetlands?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, that is correct. This would be the acquired lands, mm-hmm. the acquired and lands payment.
Madam Chair, Ms. Damon, did the committee, or I guess this is not a committee recommendation, does the DNR have any thought about how they're just proposing that we take 10% of the current payment and reallocate it so that the townships get more money and the counties get less? Is that what the proposal is?
Ms. Damon?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, yes, that was the recommendation, but obviously that has an adverse impact on the counties.
And, well, they can.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, just to be fair, we did discuss this within the committee. There was some concerns amongst the counties on that issue. They supported the 10% for the townships as long as there was new money added to the formula. Our position is that this was an oversight back in 1995 that should have been dealt with at that point in time, because counties who are receiving the flat rate, which is only a handful of counties right now, those townships are receiving a 10% share, but the counties who have all switched to acquired rates, appraised value rates on the acquired lands at 0.75%, they're still capped at that 10% of the flat rate distribution. So while the counties and townships are, you know, in agreement that they would support this if there was new money, we feel it was an oversight that should be addressed just as an adequacy issue.
Senator Skoy.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Myers. Was there any discussion, or what does the DNR think, you know, a number of these unorganized townships, et cetera, you know, these are pretty sparsely populated areas. You know, what was the talk about the utilization of this 10% by the townships?
Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, you bring up a very good point. The other side of the coin is the Lake LaSalle property that was recently purchased. Hubbard County and the townships there wanted those dollars to be distributed based upon the hunting land rates for that parcel. So the townships wanted to make sure they were receiving their 10% of the PIL payments. And I'm not sure if we have the authority to do that or not. So this would, in essence, deal with that issue. But what do you do with when some townships would receive a windfall, so to speak? So that is a good point that needs to be addressed. One other recommendation that we talked about but was not contained in the report was to take a step back and really try to overhaul the entire payment in lieu of taxes program. The Commissioner Landwehr had suggested that we work with the University of Minnesota Land Economics Department to discuss with them and look for recommendations on how do you come up with an actual accurate valuation for these lands. Look at the history that's contained in the report. It's been done kind of section by section, piecemeal by piecemeal, parcel, acquisition by acquisition, and sometimes. So we recognize that the system we have works for the most part, but there may be a different way to do it as well. It's not contained in the report, but I know it's something that some people are still interested in doing.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Damon.
If I could add to Mr. Meyer's comments, Senator Skoy raised the question of unorganized townships. In the current distribution formula in Chapter 477A, payments for lands that are not within an organized township are deposited in the County General Revenue Fund.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sure there are a number of issues raised in this report that I think the legislature is going to want to address, and maybe even sooner rather than later, but we'll see. Senator Saxog, welcome to the committee, and we have before us Senate File 387. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I come to you not only as a state senator, but as a former Itasca County Commissioner, so I have some feel of what's going on. And as you say, we have Senate File 387 in front of us, the bill to restore the annual inflationary adjustments to flat rate PILT payments. Recommendation 3, as we noted on the from the DNR. Last biennium, as we had to deal with the budget deficit, of course, the legislature and the governor agreed to eliminate inflation the flat and go to flat rate PILT payments as a cost saving measure. Payment in lieu of taxes is incredibly important to counties up north. They have large amounts of public land and a relatively small tax base. As an example, I have with me today formerly Lake of the Woods County Commissioner Todd Beckel and Commissioner from Kuching County Wade Pavlik, and as I look at Kuching County, almost a third of the county's budget comes from payment in lieu of taxes, $1.2 million. That's based on a levy of $3.75 million. In the case of Lake of the Woods, 40% of their budget comes out of the payment in lieu of taxes. You have in your packet a couple of I think some pretty good representations of percentages of county land that are in PILT and percentage of the total payment for the state of Minnesota in PILT, and then the actual figures on another sheet that look at later. By the way, John Angaro, representing St. Louis County, is with us today and will be available for and will comment too. So, as I said, I have Commissioner Beckel and Commissioner Pavlik here with me, and we're going to let them make some comments, if you don't mind, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Love to welcome them. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Commissioner Wade Pavlik, International Falls. I live on Rainy Lake. I look out my window, Canada, so I'm on the extreme end. I've got a new commissioner on my board with a funny name, S-K-O-E or something. So I'm getting a little used to that. Yeah, I'm not, you know, I've been around a long, long time. I'm going to tell you, Madam Chair, I'm not known for diplomacy or, you know, being real good at committee meetings. I like to speak my mind.
Go right ahead.
On this issue, and Senator Saxog just outlined, it could not be more critical for a county like mine or Lake of the Woods, where former Commissioner Beckel is from. And by the way, he is an absolute expert on these PILT issues, and I'm going to defer to him on the details. But let me tell you, you know, I want to go to how it affects a county like ours. We're the second largest county in Minnesota. We've got this huge, huge area under our jurisdiction, and very little of it's privately owned. We don't have a lot of tax base, so it's difficult for us to operate. You know, maybe I'm from the old country, but I expect units of government to live up to agreements like I do. I've got agreements. I've been there over 20 years, but I'm living up to agreements that my county entered into with the city of International Falls, for example, or other counties where I'm the chairman of the corrections in Duluth, where we have a prison. I live up to those agreements because they were agreements made before I got there, but out of honor and a duty, I respect those agreements. When I just saw up on your slide there, the legislature, one of the recommendations that came out of the PILT committee, the legislature should consider restoring annual inflation adjustments. Well, I'm sorry. Why did they quit? I mean, I have a real problem with that because you put a county like mine in jeopardy. Those kinds of actions affect our budget hugely because, as Senator Saxog pointed out, it's a big percentage of our levy. Anyway, let me go on. I'm testifying. By the way, the fact that we are up there on the Canadian border, I view one of my responsibilities along with Lake of the Woods is protecting you from being invaded by my friends in Canada. Are we doing a good job?
Yes.
You haven't been invaded, have you?
No.
All right, so we are doing something up there.
New Hope is safe.
I'm going to testify today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, which I'm a member. I've been on the Environmental Committee there for over 20 years. I'm testifying in support of Senate File 387, which you're considering here today. And I want to thank my friend and colleague. We were commissioners for many years together, too. So, you know, we have a very good relationship, Senator Saxog, for bringing this issue forward. And he deserves a lot of credit for that because he does understand how it affects counties up north. Restoring the annual inflation adjustments for PILT is one of AMC's top top legislative agendas, and we're all making sure of that because it's such a huge issue to us. I want you to understand that. The state of Minnesota owns about 70% of the land area in the state, or roughly 8.5 million acres. Let me put that in context. For those of you who don't know that, the state of Minnesota is either the third or fourth largest landowner in the entire nation. We are a huge landowner. It's not states out west where you have those vast areas. Those are all federal. The state of Minnesota is a huge, huge landowner, which tells me that you and the legislature have a huge responsibility to make sure that you not only live up to those agreements, but administer it correctly. I appreciate what you're trying to do here. But I want you, I can't say enough how much it affects counties with all these public lands like ours. It includes forests, parks, trails, wildlife management areas. I might add, Coochin County, where I live, in St. Louis County, my neighbor to the east, we have the state's only national park, which is significant for Minnesota. Anyway, natural resource lands, it provides significant benefits to all Minnesotans. That's why you folks are overseeing it, and I do appreciate that. But these lands also create an additional financial burden to the local taxpayer. And when the state doesn't live up to its agreements, guess what? The people I represent pick up the bill. They feel it. Particularly in parts of the state like mine with high concentrations of state-owned lands. Coochin County, these costs are especially high, and as Senator Saxon pointed out, 70% of that land comes under this jurisdiction. So, again, when the state doesn't live up to its agreements, we're going to feel it. But these lands also create additional financial burdens to local taxpayers, as I pointed out, particularly in the parts with high concentrations, and on and on. Payments in lieu of taxes represents a property tax in the state as the landowner pays the local units of government to help offset these costs. Pill payments reduce the financial burden to property taxpayer created by the reduced tax base and land management costs associated with publicly owned lands, the state. We pick those up. It also addresses the disproportionate impacts of state land acquisition between different regions by spreading the cost of maintaining lands for public use across the state, and it also helps allay the public concerns related to land acquisition. These pill payments are distributed to counties per statute, per agreement. Yeah, I keep going back to agreements because I'm a big believer in living up to agreements. And counties distribute these payments to other local governments in the county as directed by statute. Now, that includes the school districts, which we're all concerned about. And they get a percentage of these payments. And I want to remind you of that. It's a very important issue. Where I live, again, this huge, huge land area, education is a big issue. It's difficult, very difficult to administer when you're that spread out, giving children equal opportunities here in Minnesota. Many pill payments are paid on a flat per acre rate, and you've heard the discussion on 0.75%. But when the Maine pill laws were enacted in 1979, it did not include inflationary increases for those flat rate payments, meaning that even as land values increased, which we know they have, the state's property tax payment to the local governments stayed flat. Now, putting that in English, the local taxpayers picking up the difference, just so you know that. The state's property tax payment to local government stayed flat. In 2000, the legislature recognized this failure, and I was here then in the PILT system and amended the PILT statute to include, inflation. Starting in 1994 rather than 1980, which means we still lost all that time. Now, this system served the state well for a decade, though it's worth noting that if the annual inflationary adjustments had been applied to the pill payments from the day they were set in statute, they'd be 81% higher than they are today. So, in my opinion, the state taxpayers have gotten a great deal here. However, last biennium, as the legislature wrestled with this historic budget deficit, and I don't have to talk to you about that. And the governor agreed to eliminate the inflationary adjustment to the flat rate pill payments as a cost-saving measure. Well, I understand that. But you know what? My constituents don't. So, the state as a property owner, and you are the property owner in this case, decided it could no longer afford to pay these property tax bills. Well, you know, I run into that all the time as a commissioner over the past over 20 years, but I can't do that. I can't do that. I wish I could. I wouldn't do it anyway. But the state does, you know, and that leaves, you know, leaves us in the bind, not you. We're the ones who the taxpayers come to, and they can't understand what's going on here. I don't have a good answer.
Senator Saxog and Commissioner, we do have two other bills, and we'd like to hear your other witness. I wonder if you could wrap up your testimony in the next couple minutes.
You know, absolutely, Madam Chair, I can. You know, I guess I would just like to say that, you know, when we talk about the legislature restoring these inflation adjustments, I mean, how about just living up to the agreements that we've made in the past? That's what I'm asking for here today. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Todd Beckel.
And again, if you could keep your remarks brief, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, Madam Chair. Todd Beckel, former Lake of the Woods County Commissioner.
Mr. Beckel, I did sit
on the PILT Advisory Group. I was one of the members. To go back to Senator Scoy's question on the public value. Sorry, I'll take part of the blame for that. I threw public value in there because it's a whack a piece. In our area, Wade and myself, we're 87% wetlands. Well, it doesn't have very good much value when you assess it, but when it comes down to trying to do any public work or trying to do a project and we have to replace for it, it's costing us anywhere between $13,000 up to $24,000 for replacement. So there is public value to wetlands, but we're not getting paid for it. So it was kind of a manipulation piece that we threw in there just so you understood that there is differences in the lands. You all received the report. I don't know how much you understand about all the different land types. You know, there is 8.5 million acres of land, and we pay a whole bunch of different rates on them. We really didn't get into that at the group because it's going to cost money, and we understand that there's not a whole lot of extra money. The main piece we could agree on was the inflationary piece, which we'd like you to look at. It was a cost savings, but we didn't go look at the reassessment every 5 years. That cost the state about $4.2 million. If you would have done the other part and left the inflation in there, it only would have cost us $170,000. So you really didn't save a whole bunch of money on that issue, and it was only for about 1.5 million of the 8.5 million acres. We do need to come back and look at how the other types are paid. I mean, if you look at the different counties, in Lake of the Woods County, we're quite fortunate. I think it's $2.03 on average we get per acre of state-owned land. You go to Cooch County, they get 83 cents an acre. And I understand lands are worth more down in this area, but in Ramsey County, you get over $1,200 an acre. And if it's for public, and a lot of it's, you know, parks or wildlife, what's the difference? Where is the public value? And what are we paying for? That's about all, unless there's questions.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, and thank you. You worked on this group, so that thank you for your work there. Isn't part of the issue between Lake of the Woods and Cooch County is that much of the land in Lake of the Woods got classified in that WMA Concon land deal, and all the land in Cooch is left to state forest?
Yes. I mean, right now there, committee and Senator Scoy, right now there's only four counties left that are taking the flat rate. All the rest of them are taking the 0.75%. Cooch County is getting less money for theirs because they took the 0.75% on their higher valued price of their non-hunting and their hunting property, but they're getting a smaller payment. Instead of getting the $5.13 an acre, they think they get $4.09. Where we took the Concon payment, the flat rate, we get the $5.13. And in the legislative auditor's report, and he said that they were paying too much for land in that report, I hate to say it, he was probably looking at Lake of the Woods County. It is a lot of wetland. So really the value isn't that high, but the public value of wetlands is much higher than that. If you go through Bowser and look at what an acre of land of wetland in Lake of the Woods County is worth, is about $3,600 is what they say it's worth. If we taxed you on, if you put that in the 0.75%, we'd get a much larger payment.
And Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, if we're able to figure out some value mechanism that reflects this public versus private, which, you know, that's a ways, probably a little ways away, but let's assume we can get there. Would you guys be supportive of going to more of the valuation mechanism, a percent of value, as opposed to just the flat rate with an inflator on it?
Commissioner Beckley.
Committee, I believe we would. It's just a lot of work to get our assessor to get that done. I mean, you've got some isolated parcels out there that haven't had people on them. Well, we had a few people on them this year with the fire, but there hasn't been anybody on them, and you really can't access them. When you start talking the wetlands, you just can't get to them. And yes, with the digital photos, you can do a better job, but then there's still that personal opinion in there of what really is the value.
And I imagine, being Mr. Chair, because there's no sales, there's no baseline to start from.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Commissioner Pavlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and I just put this in a reality perspective so people understand it. Coochin County has the largest repository of wetlands in the entire nation. County wetlands, the entire nation. Between us and Lake of the Woods, we've got most of the wetlands in Minnesota. When it comes to PILT, we have that low payment that was just described by former Commissioner Beckel because it was considered, you know, essentially wasteland. It's wetlands, you can't really do much with it. Yet, turn around, and when I try to have a constituent build a home or a business establish themselves in Coochin County, they have to deal with wetlands. All of a sudden, instead of not so valuable land, it's $20,000 an acre to mitigate it. The state can't have it both ways. I mean, this is how frustrating it is for us up there, because we're getting it from both sides from opposite approaches, and they're both coming from the state. So, I just like to put that in a reality check and what my constituents deal with. So, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like John Ungaro from St. Louis County to come up and say very few words, because St. Louis County has 11% of the PILT payments, and about at least that percentage of the lands. Do they not, Mr. Ungaro?
Mr. Chair and Senator Saksok.
Welcome
correct.
To the committee, Mr. Ungaro, and identify yourself for the record.
John Ungaro, Director of Government Relations for St. Louis County. I don't have much more to add. I think pretty much everything has been said that's important regarding this issue. The only thing I can think of is that the actual cost of what this legislation is proposing to do, from the big picture standpoint, some of you may be a little bit confused, because the overall cost for the 87 counties is only $400,000 roughly a year, a little over $400,000 a year. And I've had some legislators comment to me that, why is this such a big deal to the counties if it's only that much for these two types of PILT lands? And the answer to that, I think, has been answered here by Senator Saksog and the two county commissioners. As you can tell from both Lake of the Woods and Coochin County, anytime your overall budget relies on 40% of it for PILT payments and that budget is froze, that is going to have an impact on the other property taxpayers in that county. And as one of the commissioners alluded to, the study that was done over the summer said that if PILT inflation had been included back when it began in 1979, so from 1980 until 2000, those PILT payments, if inflation had been added, that would have been approximately 81% higher PILT payment that counties would be receiving today, again, which is a big deal for these counties, especially in northern Minnesota, that have over 50% or more of their lands in public land ownership. So I just wanted to add that perspective to you, that what you have before you today is a very affordable bill from the big picture, so we would urge your support of it. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for any of the testifiers or Senator Saksog? Got another testifier.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem, General Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I will try to be very brief. We also are here in support of Senator Saksog's bill. We just wanted to give you a little bit of data from the township perspective of why this is a good start, but it is just that. It's a start. It's not the ending place from our perspective. Last week when this bill was heard on the House side, we had a township assessor available to testify from Marshall County, and she was able to bring data down that showed that comparable land surrounding the land now getting pilt, which would generate about $1.45 an acre in township taxes, and they're getting 51 cents under the current pilt reimbursement at the township level. After her testimony, we had some folks from the southern part of the state down in Fillmore and Houston County contact their auditor and do the number crunching, and same thing. Their numbers range from $1.35 an acre to a little over $2 an acre for 2012 tax revenues, and we're locked in at 51.3 cents. So this inflationary replacement is critical to keep that gap from getting worse, but it is simply the starting place for the much broader pilt discussion, as you heard from the study.
Okay, thank you. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, with the large difference in taxes from the, or income, from the wetlands to the non-wetlands, I'm wondering what kind of impetus there is to keeping the wetlands, which I don't consider waste areas. I think they're very, very valuable, and I hate to see anything that is pushing us in the direction of getting rid of them to increase income.
What? Commissioner Pavlik.
Well, the fact is that in Coochin County, where we have the largest repository, we've protected those wetlands over all the time that county's been in existence. So we certainly share that belief, which I think is widely held in the state of Minnesota and in the nation, quite frankly. But having said that, it becomes the reimbursement or the public value issue. If it's a value to the public, to the state of Minnesota, to the United States of America, why should the local taxpayers be burdened with that cost? That is my issue. At least let's make it fair. When you build a business down here in the southern area of the state of Minnesota, guess what? You're not mitigating land at $20,000 an acre. I am up there for my constituents. That is a huge burden and a huge impediment to any type of development or tax base. That is the problem. We're trying to equalize that. That's what this issue is about. This is, and I agree with our township. I have no townships. I'm the township guy in Coochin County. There's no townships up there. We're unique in the state. Actually, Lake of the Woods is too. I'm the township guy. I've got to go deal with these people. I don't have the good answers. That's why I'm here today. Let's try to make this fair. That's where I'm coming from. And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair and
Senator,
Senator Eaton. And the other thing about us, you know, is that at one time, of course, we tried to farm the whole state, and northern Minnesota was no exception. And we found it wasn't great farming land.
That's how Coochin went broke.
Yeah, that's how Coochin went broke. But we do have well over 90% of our pre-settlement wetlands. And if you take what the beaver's done up there, you may be over 100%. So, you know, we really don't feel that we aren't taking care of it, and we are doing a service to the rest of the state.
Okay, anything further? Senator Saxhog?
No, we appreciate you hearing this bill, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair and members, thank you.
All right, Senator Saxhog, we'll lay over your bill, Senate File 387. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members.
The next bill on the agenda is Senate File 477. Senator Eaton. Senator Eaton, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 477, And I'm going to briefly go through. It's a technical bill from the Department of Revenue. The it does not have any revenue changes involved. It's neutral. If you look at the first sections, the estimated tax payments for C corporations and exempt entities, the trying to see if there was any changes there that I really not really. That basically what it is to clarify that that both C corporations that pay and apply to both C corporations that pay corporate franchise tax and exempt entities that pay unrelated business income tax. And under Section 5 and 9, it was essentially just to repeal obsolete language. And 6, 7, 8, and 9 are extraterritorial income modifications. This is to repeal obsolete references in Internal Revenue Code. And it also amends cross-references found in statute. It has no other effect. In the unity of ownership, under Section 10, essentially clarifies that this does not exist when two or more corporations are involved, unless they're directly or indirectly is a common owner of more than 50%. Is there any questions on Article 1?
Go ahead, Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Article 2 is on the estate tax, and Section 1 involves would require a return if there's a cessation of the trade or business or a disqualifying disposition of the property that was excluded originally from the taxable estate. New? I didn't think so. It's not new. It's just, I think, stated more clearly. In Section 2 is kind of a, that requires qualified heirs to file two information returns if a decedent excluded from the taxable estate qualified small business or qualified farm property. This is leave this one. They do not require this federally, but we want to make sure that they're notified that it needs to be done so that people don't have to pay the penalty for late filing. Correct. All right.
Senator Eaton, and this is just for the qualified small businesses or qualified farm property, is it? That's what you're talking about?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
The recapture payment due date is in Section 4 and 5 is to reflect the recapture tax payment due date on or before 6 months after the cessation of the trade or the business or the disqualifying disposition of the property that was excluded from the taxable estate. Is there anything else? Is there any questions? That pretty much is the changes. The main change, I think, is the change in that it's not a requirement. It's under this one. I forgot to say about the where they don't have to use the licensed. Is that in mine? Okay, Article 3.
Okay, are you completed with Articles 1 and 2?
I am.
Any questions from committee members before we move on to Article 3? All right.
Okay. The Article 3, the main changes are, the homestead applications and homestead penalties. basically is private data. The information that is supplied to the assessor to support an application is confirms that this remains private data, which is now the case on Social Security numbers, et cetera. In assessor's duties, they have, this I believe is a little change in that they're allowing county assessors to do appraisals related to land exchanges and to provide that they do not need to be licensed as real estate appraisers under Minnesota Statute 82B. In sections 3 and 9, we have the usage taxation. And this is to clarify that the taxes on the use of federal real property are assessed as personal property against the user. Obsolete limited market value provision. This is to, on section 4, it's to remove a reference to a limited market value provision that is no longer pertinent. Section 10, we're getting into definitions here in rural areas for electrical cooperatives per capita tax. This is to refer to statutory cities and home rule charter cities, and that's necessary technical change because the current statute refers only to incorporated city, which is a designation that doesn't exist anymore. And the notice of delinquent property tax, this is to eliminate obsolete text that about notices regarding the various times within which the owners of the different types of property may avoid a forfeiture of the property by paying the taxes, costs, and interest. It replaces the language with instruction that the Commissioner of Revenue will provide a correct and complete narrative description of the various redemption periods, and that the respective county auditors will include this in the notice. Section 14 is a repealer. This is to eliminate a gross misdemeanor penalty if a lesser of tangible personal property fails to file a list of all leased items with the commissioner by February 15th of the year. Each year, and this requirement is obsolete, so that really is no change. And it also eliminates the obsolete limited market value provision. And this statute provided a limited one-year value exclusion for residential property if qualifying investments were made, reducing hazards related to lead paint. This provision is obsolete beginning with taxes payable in 2013. Article 4, or any questions on Article 3?
Any questions, committee? No, go ahead.
Okay, Article 4 is special taxes, sales, and use tax. The deed tax partitions on Section 1. The new language makes it clear that the exemption only applies to a deed or that portion of a deed that divides a contiguous tract of co-owned real property into separate tracts owned individually by each of the co-owners, which has been the longstanding department interpretation. It's just putting it into language. In Sections 2 and 5, we have some obsolete accelerated monthly sales tax payment provisions. This is to eliminate that. Accelerated remittance schedules for vendors with annual sales tax collections of at least $120,000 and repeals the related penalty and safe harbor provision. This condition was met on February 2012 budget forecast, so this change does not affect the June estimated payments. Liquor tax, the brewer credit, and this is to clarify a reference to the calendar year should be changed to fiscal year. Retaliatory provisions, this is to strike an obsolete reference and to include life insurance companies in the list of sections that are covered by the retaliatory tax provision. These provisions cover foreign companies that may do business in Minnesota and thus should cover life insurance companies as well. This is a correction of an oversight that occurred when the rates for life insurance companies were lowered in 2006.
Okay, any questions on
Article 4?
Article 4? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 5 is on minerals, and this essentially deletes the exemption from property tax for direct reduced ore subject to the net proceeds tax. Direct reduced ore is defined as an iron ore product, and the net proceeds tax only applies to non-ferrous oils, minerals, and metals. Non-ferrous occupation tax mining under Section 2 is to provide a definition of the term hydrometeorological processes that is used in the subdivision. And net proceeds tax is the amendment conforms the distribution language to the language imposing a tax in Section 298.015. And this is a distribution of net proceeds tax is paid on mining or extraction fees of ores, metals, or minerals outside the taconite assistance area. Miss anything? So that's Article 5.
Okay, any questions on Article 5? Go ahead.
Article 6 on miscellaneous. Section 1 is void warrants. And this is to clarify that the holder of a void warrant may not recover against the state, stating the obvious. And on Section 2 through 16, uniform interest on penalties, this provides a single uniform statement of a rule regarding when interest on penalties accrues. Currently, there are multiple places in the statutes where this rule is stated in various ways. And these sections adopt a single rule that interest accrues on a penalty from the date it is assessable. So, are there any questions on Article 6?
Any question, members, on Article 6? Okay. Closing comments, Senator Eaton?
There is, like I said, this is revenue neutral, and these are technical changes. I believe the most significant one is that county assessors are not required to be licensed.
Okay. Any questions on any of the provisions in the bill? Okay. This bill needs to go to full tax committee, so Senator Eaton moves that the bill be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is Senate File 476. Senator Dietzig. Hey, Senator Dietzig.
Hi, good morning. Senate File 476 is the department's suggested policy text changes. Every year they make recommendations to change and delete some obsolete sections and then also to address some issues that staff has found. It is supposed to and intended to be non-controversial and revenue neutral. I have Mark Peterson here, and I believe Alliance Storici and a Pat Finnegan are in the audience if we have questions from the department. So Article 1 of the bill deals with income and franchise taxes. Section 1 amends the reporting requirements of regulated investment companies. Current law requires regulated investment companies to report municipal bond interest and dividends paid only if the company is required to register in Minnesota under Chapter 88, the Minnesota Securities Act. This bill removes that requirement because these companies now register under federal law and in some cases are using this as an excuse not to send in reports. Section 2 is withholding on payments to out-of-state contractors. So currently, entities contracting with certain non-Minnesota companies are required to withhold 8% of payments due under the contract if the cumulative of all the payments to the contractor exceeds 50% or $50,000 in 1 year. Sorry. This bill changes that requirement to withhold 8% if the value of the contract exceeds $50,000. So it goes from a cumulative contract to just one contract. This change was requested by the Department of Administration because it's difficult for some agencies and local governments to track cumulative payments. These funds are held by the department as surety for payment of state taxes owed. Any questions on Article 1?
Any questions, committee? Okay, go ahead to Article 2.
Mr. Sterici. This is Mr. Sterici with the department, if there's any questions. So Article 2 of the bill deals with property taxes. Section 1 makes a conforming change. So later on in Section 7, we're going to delete a reference to non-homestead resident on ag land classification. And so this section just makes a conforming change to delete that reference in this section. In Section 2, taxes credited to state airport funds. So this section clarifies that the Commissioner of Revenue actually collects the tax, so it conforms state law to practice. Section 3 also deals with air flight property tax. The statute refers to both late payment and late filing penalties. The section adds a cross-reference to clarify that the Commissioner has the power to abate both late payment and late filing penalties. Section 4 changes the definition of person for tax purposes. So the definition takes into account that many people hold their homes or properties in trust. Section 5 clarifies the treatment of sales and transfers in the Rural Preserve Property Tax Program. If certain ownership changes occur, like a death or a marriage or divorce, or the property is transferred to a trust, but basically the same people retain the beneficial interest, the sale or transfer disqualifies the land from the Rural Preserve Program, but the new owners may qualify without an intervening period of disqualification. So it should avoid deferral taxes becoming payable when both the prior owner and the new owner qualify. Section 6 amends the agricultural homestead definitions to reflect current interpretation. It clarifies intensive livestock and poultry confinement operations. It says they are agricultural even when they are less than 10 acres in size. The land must be agricultural when enrolled in a conservation program. And that the 10-acre parcel size limit actually includes 11-acre parcels if they have a house, because the 1 acre surrounding the house is required by statute to be treated as residential. Section 7 eliminates the property tax classification that we talked about earlier. It's a non-homestead single-unit residences on agricultural land. My understanding is there's no properties in that classification, so we're deleting it. And Section 8 amends the timeline for railroads and utilities to file property tax valuation administrative appeals. So current law allows both railroads and utilities to file until May 15th or 10 days after the date of valuation, whichever is earlier. This amendment allows railroads, it gives them until the earlier of June 15th or 10 days after the valuation, and utilities the earlier of July 1st or 10 days after the valuation. And Section 9, the amendment in this section allows the commissioner to prescribe the form of the lien notices recorded under the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program. This will allow for greater consistency between the forms used by the commissioner. So any questions for Section Article 2?
Hey, any question, committee? All right, Senator Dietzick, go ahead with Article 3.
And this is Pat Finnegan from the department. So Article 3 is miscellaneous. Section 1 is the notification by electronic means, and there was some controversy on this last year, but this amendment provides that the notification of determinations and actions of the commissioner sent by electronic means is sufficient. But the taxpayer or other person like the power of attorney has to agree and proactively ask to receive these notices electronically. So we're not just automatically sending out notices online. The person has to ask to receive them online. Section 2 is relating to petroleum tax and E85. So it changes the definition of E85 to not more than 85% ethanol by volume, but at a minimum must contain greater than 50% ethanol by volume. And this brings the definition in line with recent changes by the Federal American Society for Testing and Materials, the Minnesota Commerce, and the Ag Departments. Section 3 is sales and use tax, presumption of tax, burden of proof. This amendment amends in the statute the definition of taken in good faith for purposes of seller relief. These provisions are necessary for conformity with the streamlined sales tax agreement. Section 4 changes the definition of wholesale sales price for tobacco products. So currently, references to a price list are deleted because they become obsolete pretty much the day they're put in there. And now the price at which the distributor purchases the tobacco product. So this is easier for the department and the distributors because they know the actual price paid at the time of a purchase. Section 5 and 6 moves the tax on non-admitted insurance purchasing group from one subdivision to another. So we're not getting rid of it. We're just shifting it to another area that is similar to other entities that purchase insurance from non-admitted insurers. And Section 7 and 8 amends the statutes to change purchasing groups' due date for filing returns from twice a year to once a year, making it consistent with other reports. So are there any questions on Section 3 or the bill? Senator Thompson.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ezek, I think you kind of answered this already, but with respect to Section 1, I'm all for doing things electronically, but being someone who occasionally just responds to emails and doesn't read them carefully, maybe Mr. Finnegan or someone else can comment, is this a separate email or a separate transmission in such a way that any person responding would obviously know that they're agreeing to electronic transmissions, because it's just such a pain to miss a deadline or not do something because you don't realize the circumstance. So can you just kind of describe how it looks for a taxpayer to respond to that?
Mr. Finnegan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, they would have to sign up for that, for notices to be sent by electronic email. So it would be my understanding is it would be a paper that they would actually sign and say, they're going to, in the future, they'll accept notices through the email.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Finnegan.
Okay, thank you. Further questions on Article 3? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Skoy is expecting me to strike it, but it's an opt-in this time. It's drafted as an opt-in, which is actually different than it's been drafted in the past, is my understanding. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, that you have to proactively ask to receive them by email.
Yep. Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Related to Section 4, if I could. Anytime we start changing the tax related to tobacco, it's pretty controversial. Can you just explain, do you expect in the Department of Revenue that there will be any change in the revenue that's received from these, from taxes on these products with this change?
Mr. Finnegan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman. No, this came about as the department was involved in a couple different pieces of litigation. There was a Minnesota Supreme Court case, the McLean case, and there was a Minnesota tax court case, the Cormark decision. And the effect of both of those pieces of litigation was that the Attorney General's office recommended that we take a look at the definition that we had of wholesale sales price and move basically to a purchase price. And that's sort of what the court was telling us also.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. But I appreciate the history, but I don't think it answered my question. My question is, if you change this this law and redefine this, does it change at all the revenue that the Department of Revenue receives as a result?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this is the policy that we have right now, so there'd be...
Thank you.
Any further questions on Article 3? Any further questions or discussion on the entire bill? A closing comment, Senator Dietzick.
I'd actually like to thank Ms. Von Mosch and Ms. Pollack and Mr. Sylvia for their patience and help in answering my many questions. And I'd like to thank the co-authors, Senator Thompson, Senator Skoy, Senator Rest, and Senator Ortman. It's been an interesting learning curve, and thank you for hearing the bill.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, the bill will go to taxes. So Senator Dietzick moves that Senate File 476 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Skoy, anything on the Tax Committee tomorrow?
Mr. Chair and members, we will be hearing the Property Tax Working Group and the two bills that we didn't hear the previous Thursday because we ran out of time.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, we're adjourned.